From the front lines.
It's not going to work, man.
From the tailgate. Representing KGYR and its stakeholders. We are the Forum for the Fans. The Bleed Blue Show. Now, here are your hosts, Steve and Chris.
We are the Forum Fans Bleed Blue Show. What's going on, Big Blue Roundtable episode? Final episode of the week. All right, final episode of the week as we look at the off season with this NFL. BleedBlueShow.com is our website. Audio archive episode, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, all that good stuff. You know, I want to lead off this episode as far as what happened earlier this week. Former head coach for the New York Giants, Jim Fossil. I heard the news. I forgot where I was, but because I don't watch a lot of news. Me, Steve, I just catch things in a whim. Sometimes I miss a lot of stuff. And happened to catch that news. I think I was listening to the satellite radio that I heard that Jim Fossil, under going through a heart surgery, he had passed away. Now, I think he was 71 years old, and remembering what his legacy as a coach, as a figure in the NFL. And Jim Fossil, for what I remember as a young Giants fan, my early 20s around that time, I vividly remember him willing their way to the playoffs. I remember Howard Cross on that team. I remember Tiki Barber, Kerry Collins, those type of figures on the New York Football Giants. And I'll never forget the 2000 playoff run. And then after that, which was a heartbreaker, but the 2001 was one of my favorites and probably, it's definitely top five for sure. When you look at, the playoff run they did, the NFC Championship. I said this years ago on this platform. I remember, I think I was talking to Worm. The 2000 NFC Championship game versus Minnesota. And everybody thought the Giants were going to lose that game, even though they were the home team on that day. One of the best games the Giants has played in modern history, outside of Super Bowl wins, of course, but Jim Fossil, head coach of that team, when they played against those Minnesota Vikings and won 41-0, I'll never forget that. I know they went on to the Super Bowl and they got destroyed by the Baltimore Ravens, but heading into that, the leadership under that team, the defense they had at the time, under the head coach of Jim Fossil, never will forget that. And then you added, a year, the very next year, or 2 years later, the big lead they had in Candlestick Park versus the Niners, up 38-14, and they blew that game. And remember the botched field goal that the Giants were supposed to kick, and they never got the kick off, and then the kicker tried to they tried to throw it to the end zone, and it was just a whole hot mess. That's the Jim Fossil era, and then after that he was gone or off the team. But those are some proud Big Blue football teams right there. Those early 2000 teams, a lot to represent. Good defense, decent offense, good head coach in Jim Fossil, man, and wanted to share that news when that happened. So that, rest in peace to Jim Fossil, former head coach for the New York Football Giants. I saw Giant fans chime in on social media on the book about his passing, and it brought back a lot of memories, man. Because remember, social media wasn't really around that time to have that, that interconnected communication like we do now. So it's interesting to have these conversations on former figureheads for the teams that we root for. Like, we never had a conversation on Joe Torre or Jeff Van Gundy, or Roger Neilson, Mike Keenan, guys like that, former coaches of these teams that we root for. And, Fossil, I wonder how those episodes would have went with, you know, all of us and with the stakeholders. Shout outs to Jim Fossil and his family and his passing. Like, God, man, we're getting old, man. Like, damn, Jim Fossil passed away. You know, so, rest in peace. Not a lot of news. The only thing I'll say to this, for the rest of this summer, I had to look at the calendar and I said, okay, for the rest of this summer, as we head into a 17-game regular season, we're only going to have 5 episodes this summer on an every other week basis. And I said to myself, okay, so how are we going to do this? We're going to, you know, I was going to get with Chris and we're going to talk about how we're going to discuss the football this offseason. For the football, around the NFL, for our squad, around the other team. I think we're going to do it like this, where every other week we're going to hit like we normally do, okay? We cover every area of the squad, all right? We cover wide receivers, tight ends, linebackers, corners, DBs, whatever, man. Special teams, quarterbacks. We're going to do probably multiple areas per week if we could have the time to fit it in, but also would like to get around the NFL. I would like to talk other teams, other divisions for the entire summer. You know, maybe 1 week we'll do two divisions depending on the amount of time we have, along with talking about the news and what happened with our own team. So that's going to be a target for us for the next 2-3 months up until the start of the regular season, because this is going to go by fast. And this every other week basis that we have been doing here on the Big Blue Roundtable for the last couple of years, doing it every other week. And we like it like that, because I remember a lot of episodes in the past we used to do every week, man. It used to get exhausting. Remember, we used to do 2-hour episodes every week, and it was killing us, killing myself, killing Chris, killing the stakeholders. So we're going to probably attack it like that in the offseason. So we'll update the website, not only with the football and what area of the team we're going to discuss, but also as well, you know, for the rest of the episodes, for the hockey, for the baseball, for the basketball. So we're going to have some fun, lifted episodes along with this football as we go, man. You know, the OTAs, you heard the episode 2 weeks ago with the guys. I'll say this, man. Nothing new out of the gate, because I'm trying to take a different approach than most people. I'm trying to look at things from the player's point of view. When I say the player's point of view, instead of your traditional media, and don't get me wrong, news is news, however you break it. If it's true, it's true. It's not. But that's not where I'm going with this. We live in an age where you could follow the moves of the individual player through their social media accounts, primarily their Instagrams, all right, or Twitter. So what I would probably look at it as and take the face value of what I think I hear or read or news from directly from the player while they're at practice, while they're at their camps and stuff like that, I'm going to take that and try to analyze my thoughts compared to, you know, seeing it directly through their lenses versus a third party, you know, whatever happens in camp. You know, of course, if something happens with an injury, you talk about if something bad, like somebody gets injured, it's going to be reported, of course, but we don't necessarily know what happens in camp, all right, unless you were actually there. Remember last year, we didn't have that where fans didn't attend camp because of the COVID. That was more of a thing a couple of years ago and then several years before that at the Quest Diagnostic Center, because fans were allowed to be at camp and you see, you know, a lot of video footage. Fans will record it, you know, go live and share with us, and we'll talk about what they shared with us, and shout outs to the fans that go to camp and see it directly with their own eyes. But I'm going to try to go through it with the point of view from the lens of the players. That's how I'm going to try to attack it. It may not work, but I'm going to give it a shot. I like to try to see things from different ways, how we can analyze and have some fun with the dialogue, have some fun with the discussion, man. And this is the age of social media. These are athletes in the prime of their careers, right? A lot of these guys are under 30. So they grew up in a generation of that's all they really know is social media. So this is how they communicate to the world for good or for bad. So I will try to, me personally, I don't know about the other stakeholders. I'm just speaking for myself. I'm going to look at it from the lens of I'm going to probably get follow some social media accounts from the giant players themselves. And we'll bring those topics to the table when we get to those areas of the team. Yeah, and should have some fun with that. Now, obviously, this is really necessary, not new news, and I'll speak on it as far as Saquon Barkley. As we already know, he got injured in the game last season in Chicago, week two. It's an ACL injury, and we already know with ACL injuries, that's automatically a full year of recovery. No ifs, ands about it, right? So I think Saquon Barkley was the topic of discussion in the Giants presser with Joe Judge, and as far as timetable, and he refused to speak on it, which is rightfully so. And I know a lot of fans want to demand answers and this and that. That's a slippery slope. I think the Giants are kind of doing it right because they don't want to jump the gun and tell people when he's going to come back and if he's going to come back. Because everybody reacts to these type of injuries differently. Some get back quicker or faster than the others, you know. I really don't know. See, Saquon Barkley would be a perfect example for me when I just said about following his IG, following his Twitter. And I don't necessarily do that, but as far as the sense of training, on the road to recovery, I may try to dissect, whatever he decides to publish for the world to see on his comeback, on how that goes. And it all ties to the contract, whether he's going to be extended, what type of deal terms. I think I've heard reports or seen reports that he's, he's not thinking about contract, which I think is total bullshit. I think every player thinks about their contract. I mean, this is why they play. This is their livelihood. This is what they do. So to say I'm not thinking about my contract is politically correct bullshit. I don't buy that at all. So, and that's okay. And I know he wants to give pushback because I think if you keep it too real, if you keep it to 100, you're going to have the media all over your ass about terms, how dare he be entitled to the money. So you might get that kind of bullshit pushback. So Saquon Barkley is playing the politically correct game, and I understand it. A motherfucker like me would probably, depends on what type of player or kind of character or type of person you are, you're going to say what you need to say to let the masses know. So as far as contract, I don't have a clue where the Giants stand. But this goes back to draft night, back in 2018, the Dallas draft. When it comes to Saquon Barkley, when you drafted him at that position, you knew this day was going to come, but you did not know this day was going to come in spite of a season-ending injury from the season before. And that's a tricky situation. Now, how do you attack this? How do you deal with this? I'm going to go on a limb and say this as far as Saquon Barkley. He seems like a guy of good character, and the Giants will look to him as a franchise type of player regardless of position. So I'm pretty sure they're going to try to work out some sort of big-time money deal with upfront money, upfront guaranteed money. But, we've known in the NFL that formula as far as contracts hasn't worked historically as far as Super Bowl champion runs, meaning you don't see a high-paid running back over the last 10 years, the highest-paid running back at his position on Super Bowl runs. Like let's look at it like this. Ezekiel Elliott, Dallas Cowboy, at one point when he signed his contract, they haven't even sniffed the Super Bowl, right? If you look at Todd Gurley, he went to a Super Bowl. And remember, he got injured. He got the big contract. He ended up getting injured. And now he's not even on the Rams no more. This is how quick and fast guys move around the NFL. They signed these big contracts. The next thing you know, they're getting released or they're on to another team. Now, I think if I'm not mistaken, he played for the Falcons last year. He's probably still there. I'm not sure if he's on the roster. I got to double check that. But these big-time running backs, like Alvin Kamara's, you know, he didn't even get out of the second round, you know, when they played the Bucks. Now, I mean, I'm saying not his fault that they lost, but, you know, Alvin Kamara's, your Christian McCaffrey's, guys like that from Carolina Panthers, you know, he got injured. Big money day, you know. These guys play, you know, the Panthers, the Saints, Cowboys. Now, if you throw Saquon Barkley into the mix, the Giants. Like, running backs, if you're at that position, you're one of the highest paid players on the team. The writing is on the wall. Like, you don't even sniff Super Bowl. So the Giants are looking. I know the Giants have to be looking at this. This is common sense shit. I'm a fan, and I can see this, you know. So there's a lot to be said on that, man. The contract situation, what the Giants are going to do, I don't know. I really don't know. And then, if you know, also as far as the camp and him not being involved with the OTAs, I mean, no surprise there. I mean, like I said, you know, this is a one-year injury. A one-year full recovery to get back into the full swing of things. So, yeah, you know, we'll see what happens with the Big Blue. We'll see how we're going to attack this, man. So, the OTAs, Double Deuce episode. Let's see. Carl, is this you, man? What's up, man? Hope all is well. There's two things on the table, man. If this is Carl, I don't know. Let's see if you bring him on. What's up, man? Who's this? Carl?
Hey, good evening, Steve. How are you? Sorry I'm late.
Dude, good evening, man. What's up, man? Yo, let me ask you this. I let off with one thing. Remembering Jim Fossil, I know you probably have some memories of him. I was surprised to hear what happened with him as far as him passing away. And then also I was talking about the Saquon Barkley. Him not coming back. Did you hear the presser with Joe Judge? And if he did, on his thoughts on Saquon Barkley? I mean, this is not necessarily new news with that. But what is your opinion on, you know, contract situation? Because we knew this day was coming, you know, since 2018. You know, you draft that guy that high at running back, you're going to have to pay him unless you trade for him and get something back. I don't see the Giants doing that right now. But, you know, I mean, if we could trade Odell Beckham Jr., anybody could be off, you know. But what is your thoughts on this whole situation? What's your thoughts on the Fossil situation? Welcome back, bro. Hope all is well.
Hey, yes, indeed. You know, on Fossil, man, I was very surprised by that. I didn't even know he was, you know, in any bad health. I thought, and maybe you can correct me on this, wasn't he coaching last year for that default league? I don't know if it was the XFL or the other. There was one of the league I think that was going on. Maybe the year before that.
Oh,
I thought he was coaching.
What's it called?
One of those leagues was like January. It went for a few weeks and then something happened. I think he was coaching at that point as well. And so
you
I
might
thought,
be right.
You know, he was in relative health. But that was. Yeah, that was a sad situation to see him pass. You know, one of my favorite memories of him still, even to this day. And I was at that point, I think I was in I was a freshman in high school actually. But I remember the 2000 was my senior year of high school actually, and that was the year they went to the Super Bowl. I know we can't talk about that particular Super Bowl obviously, but I remember watching SportsCenter. And this is before social media and all this other stuff back then, when Fossil made the guarantee that the team was going to go to the playoffs. And I remember the back page of the paper the next day. It was almost as if like he was talking crazy the way it was portrayed. And at that time, you know, the 2000 Giants, you know, nobody really had any expectations for that particular team that year. So when he went out and said that, hey, we're going to make the playoffs guaranteed, like no doubt, you know, it kind of, you know, catches you a little bit off guard. But as it played out, they ended up, you know, winning the rest of their games, not only that year, but right up until, you know, 35 in Tampa, you know, he actually had, you know, a lot of us thinking, you know, they might actually win this championship. Like, you know, like that actually could happen. Obviously it didn't happen, but. You know, it is a funny thing in terms of how his tenure is looked at, you know, because relative to the Coughlin era, you know, and the Parcells era, you know, Fossil made the playoffs 3 times in 6 years, or 7 years, I think it was. 3 times. 97, he made the playoffs. 2000, made the playoffs. In 2002, made the playoffs. So 3 times in those years. Yeah, 3 times in 6 years, and then the year he got fired was the year after the 02 season, right after the 03 season when they went 4-12. But, you know, he had a relatively successful period, but, you know, he sort of fell for the same stuff a lot of the other coaches have fallen for, where there's the, you know, team didn't perform well against, you know, poor teams, teams, they would fall asleep in certain games, all this sort of stuff. But, you know, on average, and, you know, you look at the body of his work, it was a very, you know, very good job. You add in a Super Bowl on top of that. So, you know, unfortunately, sad for him. But on the Barkley front, you know, Steve, this is the conversation that we had, everybody here had, from the day that the idea of him being drafted on this team came. Everybody, everything was interconnected with him. When you draft that player, especially at the position that he was being drafted, the pay part was eventually going to come, and the fear was that the team would not be in a position where they were prepared to win while he was getting paid less money, relatively speaking. I mean, second pick in the draft, fine. And here we are, almost heading towards 4 years later. The team is, I'll let you define where you believe they are in terms of the winning part of this process. And now the bill has come due. So now, what do you want to do? He's had injury history. He's had some success. But to invest on a bet long term at that position, there is a nice little list that's out there of the running backs in the last like 3-4 years that have gotten paid and their production after they've gotten paid. And that list is bad. It's not good. So do you want to add to that list? Or is there some belief out there that he can somehow be an anomaly to almost everybody else that's gotten paid? The smart money is that he's probably, if you pay him, going to end up on that bad list. And so with that said, I'll defer to you, but, you know, when you invest the second pick in the draft on that player, you have to realize that this is how this game plays out. This is how this story ends, and you just pick your ending.
You're absolutely right. I said that right before you came on. I mentioned Christian McCaffrey. I mentioned Ezekiel Elliott, Todd Gurley. These are guys who got big contracts. And you could throw in Alvin Kamara, who actually had a very good season. But the point I made right before you came on, none of these guys or their teams sniffed the Super Bowl, except for Todd Gurley. But then he ended up getting, you know, hurt, and then he's not even on the Rams no more. So you're right. That list is a bad list of running backs because, listen, you pay a running back that high of money, the highest salary on the team, what does that mean as far as team success? And then if you look at the track record, it goes right back to your point. There is none as far as Super Bowl success. We know that this formula has not been successful, and that's where I worry. And I think it's almost like you don't want to make an emotional knee-jerk decision to pay a player of that type of talent if you know he's injury-prone, and then what it does to your salary cap. And what does it do for your overall team? So it is a very tricky situation, Carl. You're right, of course. And like I said, we knew this day was going to come since 2018. I don't know what they're going to do. Yeah. Now, to say Saquon says, I'm not thinking about my contract, like I said before, it's bullshit. Like, I don't know any – it's a politically correct thing to say, you know, to keep the media off your back. Every player – this is their livelihood. Everybody is thinking about that guaranteed money. This is what they're paying for. So he has to save that to keep
the
right. So To be honest with you, I think the Giants, if I had to guess, man, I think they're going to find a way to give him some sort of long-term deal. But if they do that, I don't see team success. And I hate to say it, but the proof of what happened over the last 4 or 5 years of guys getting signed, Ezekiel Elliott, Christian McCaffrey, Todd Gurley, guys like that, it doesn't translate into winning success for the team. It doesn't.
Yeah, and, you know, and unfortunately, see, the other part about this too, Steve, about this is that the expectation was that we would at least get all of his good years early. We haven't even gotten that outside of the first year. So we haven't even been able to get the value out of him to start with, which is that to me is sort of like it's gnawing at. It's been gnawing at me for basically for 2 years, like, you know. So let's play this out, right? Let's say you want to pay him. Now, I don't know what the numbers would be. At this point, you know, you could probably – I would – put this way, I would be for a contract similar to what Derrick Henry signed for. If you take a look at that agreement, and I think Dalvin Cook had a very similar agreement where it's something along the lines of like 3 years and $36 million, somewhere around that number. I don't know how the teams got those two players to take those kind of deals. I don't know how that happened. But the running back market, the more you get more of these sort of general managers and guys above them, or not above them, but below them, putting in the ear like, hey, listen, don't pay these dudes this. Don't. Because think of it this way, right? In the same draft that Barkley was taken, that was the same draft Nick Chubb was taken. Does anybody think that Nick Chubb is not one of the, five best running backs in the league? And from the time he was drafted, he got second-round money. He's produced at an exceedingly high rate. And now maybe he gets paid by the Browns, maybe he doesn't. Who knows? But that value, Barkley was getting paid $7.5 million the day he was drafted. Nick Chubb probably got about $600,000. And relative to the production, like, has there really been, even at Barkley's peak, has there really been much of a difference in the two players, even at their peaks?
No, I can remember some very good games by Nick Chubb. I remember there was a game they played in Baltimore, and he had a monster game. And the thing about Nick Chubb, when he was coming out of Georgia, he was hurt. Like, his injury hurt his draft stock. And you're right, man. He's actually probably had just a good enough production, if not better, in bigger scenarios because Barkley's availability hasn't been there. You know, you could scratch the entire season last year, and then before that, you know, he's been in and out of the lineup. That it's really, really interesting because you haven't seen the full scope of him. Like, we haven't gotten the entire value out of him through this rookie contract, this rookie deal. So you bring up a great point on that. And this is where, you know, the Giants, this is really about the Giants and how they're going to approach this. And I really don't know with this general manager because you signed it. We've seen where you could sign a guy and then trade him. that never happened. Like, you sign a guy to a long-term deal, like Beckham, and then you ship him off. Who's to say that can't happen again? You know,
Well, here's the problem with that. Running back value – running backs don't get traded
right.
for anything of high value at all. So that – if a team decides to go down that road, like, that's a – it's almost like buying a car off the lot. It decreases in value the second it leaves the lot. Like, don't do it. Like, that can't be – that can't even be in the option. You know, like, that option can't even be broached. Like, if you're going to do it, you know, that's why if you're going to make the investment, you're going to have to make the investment and then just eat the cost if it doesn't work out, or make the tough decision after the season and just say, you know what, we're just going to ride him until it expires and then just let him walk.
Yeah, I think that's maybe the approach. Remember, that draft, Ronald Jones got drafted in after Nick Chubb, and he ended up winning a Super Bowl with Tampa Bay this past season. I know he came with a loaded team and all these all-stars, but I guess this goes back to your point as far as adding running back value later in the draft, because we haven't seen proof that this, you know, the running back position in particular work out where he's the highest paid guy and they're a Super Bowl contending type of team. But like you said, man, like, look at Ezekiel Elliott. He just does not even look like the same running back after that contract. Christian McCaffrey gets hurt. You brought up who was the other running back you brought up? You know, Dalvin Cooks. You know, and these guys. Derrick Henry has been solid, but you know, a lot left to see, and they're adding to their roster. Matter of fact, I was going to talk about that too. You know, stuff around the NFL. You know, how do you feel about that trade, man? Like adding Julio Jones for those draft picks from, you know, between the Falcons and the Titans, man. What was your thoughts on that? Then also, I know, like we said, we're going to do rest of the summer. We got like 5 episodes between now and the start of the regular season, because on an every other week basis, we're going to talk all the teams, all the divisions between now and the start of the regular season.
Days,
we'll start that.
Yeah, we got 90 days before the season starts. That's crazy how fast everything is this long.
Yeah, yeah. We'll have fun with that. Did you hear, or your thoughts as far as Julio Jones? I can't believe how fast time has flown, because I remember he was just on Alabama, Julio Jones. And they're treating him like a journeyman almost, like crazy.
Yeah, 10 years does fly by really fast. I don't understand that trade from Tennessee's standpoint for this reason, right? So I guess I'm now supposed to believe that the Titans are, quote-unquote, not a run-first team anymore. Like, you have A.J. Brown as a tremendous receiver. You're going to bring in Julio Jones. Who knows if he's healthy? I mean, he was fighting through some injuries last year, but let's just say he's healthy and can return back to, you know, prior form. So you have these two guys on the outside, and I'm supposed to believe that you're going to be a running team still with the running back you just paid significant money? Like, really? I just remember last year, on 4th-and-1 in the playoffs with them at the 40-yard line of Baltimore with a quarterback that I think threw for like 35 touchdowns and like 10 interceptions with an all-world running back, an all-world, very good receiver, and they decided to punt the ball because the coach in his own mind is a defensive coach who didn't process that winning, offense was going to win the game for him. But yet they trade for a receiver to pay him $15 million. To do what exactly? To throw the ball more?
I think this will be more of a run-heavy team. I think that thing is going to be run through Derrick Henry as much as possible. But I do look at it like this, though. It is somewhat of an upgrade. When you let go of Corey Davis, I think Corey Davis is on the Jets now. And then you get that. And
I think so.
I would say Julio Jones over Corey Davis. And then you still have, we know A.J. Brown is their number one guy. I think he's proven that he's their, he's a solid receiver. I think he's their de facto number one guy on the outside. So I don't necessarily have an issue. A team like that, Carl, a franchise like the Tennessee Titans, you kind of need, I would call it a splash move, but that's a move that you might want to take it to the next level. You look at a division where you probably could beat Houston, you probably could beat Jacksonville, and who's the other team in the division? Let's see, you got the Jaguars,
Jacksonville. Yeah, Indy's at the top
the Colts,
right now.
The Colts.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they could take that division. You want to we always talk about with the Big Blue, where do we stack up versus the Eagles, Washington, and Dallas. When I look on paper, and we'll talk about these divisions rest of, each week of this, each episode of the summer, I would think Tennessee would probably be, it's them and the Colts. I would take them over Carson Wentz. I would. Even though I think the Colts got a nice team, a nice balanced team, I'm just not sure about Carson Wentz. But I know about Derrick Henry.
Yeah, I don't know either.
A.J. Brown. Yeah. So I think – and they got a good tight end, Jonas Smith. good, decent line. They had a, you know, they had to recover from their line because Coughlin went to the Browns, but defense was solid. I know they didn't have the quarterback for the year, but we
that,
got
that,
yeah.
That was the issue last year with them. Like, they couldn't stop anybody last year for whatever reason. Like, the I think we've thought about the Titans the way that, that they were the year before when they were, you know, when they went to New England, hit them in the mouth, they went to Baltimore and did the job, and then, you know, they teased Rapp. But last year, for whatever reason, I have to take a look. I'll look it up and see exactly how many points they gave up last year. I think they gave up nearly 30 points a game. Like, something was up with the defense last year. I don't know what that was. But, you know, that's what I thought that they were going to really try to improve that particular side of the ball relative to what happened last year. But they really, outside, I think they made one move for Bud Dupree, and that was pretty much it. That, so I'm kind of wondering what's going on with that. And maybe they're just going to take the view of, hey, listen, we scored nearly 500 points on offense last year. Let's just keep on scoring. And I've got no problem with that. Then just go ahead and do that.
Looking at I haven't studied the AFC yet. I'm going to definitely do that in between episodes so I could bring it to the round table and discuss it with you guys. But I think you never know in the NFL, but you know, if you look at it on paper and we know their abilities through college and what they have they done in the NFL based on the head coach, I like Tennessee's chances a lot in that division. So I think they did an okay thing making up for Corey Davis, who actually was kind of a letdown this past season. They had a lot of expectations, even drafting them out of Central Michigan or Western Michigan, whatever one of those Michigans he went to. It just hasn't panned out. But if Julio Jones could stay relatively healthy, he doesn't have to be the number one guy on the outside, you know, catch a couple 50-50 balls and move a couple chains here and there. I actually like that for them. I think that is actually a big deal. That's going to open up things for A.J. Brown, too.
Yeah, I'm looking at the number here now. So the Titans last year scored 491 points, fourth in the league, but they gave up 439 points, for 27 points a game last year. So that was the for an 11-5 team. Hey, I give them credit. They won a lot of games. You know, doing it, you know, the way that they did it. So maybe they're just looking at it. Hey, listen, let's put up another 500 points. Maybe we'll get a couple of stops here and there. We just go from there.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything else from around the NFL, your thoughts, any other squads, any other thoughts that you would like to, you know, share as far as, you know, other teams, put it out there on the table? I don't have necessarily nothing now. We'll put something together in the next couple of weeks. We'll get everybody and we'll discuss it. We'll talk about other areas on our team and other divisions and around the NFL with the 17-game schedule. Anything else? I can't think of anything. That was the only thing I could think of this week, what happened this week, like, you know, for the Falcons and for the Titans. Our squad is kind of, you know, they kind of do things under the radar, and I get it. So no new news for the Big Blue for me.
Yeah, I think throughout the league, I guess everybody's sort of in a holding pattern right now until this Rodgers thing gets resolved, because I don't think I don't think going into the season, I don't think we can make a general diction on, because he changes the balance of power in the, if he switches leagues, like the way, if you take Rodgers up the Packers, then you got an issue with Green Bay and how that whole NFC is structured. Cause right now I don't see a second team in the NFC that I can definitively say they are the best. They are the worthy challenger to Tampa Bay as it stands right now. But if Rodgers is on the Packers, I can make the case that yes, they are the second best team. If I take him away, and I put him on Denver, which I guess is the rumor, then I have to rethink the way the
you're talking about him going to Denver.
Well, that has been since the draft. Like, if this move gets made, if this trade happens, like, the number one target is Denver. Like, that has been the one. And I looked at the landscape. I was trying to figure out even when the rumors were starting. I was like, okay, where can this happen? Because I was figuring they weren't going to trade him in the conference, and the only place I could figure out was either the Raiders or Denver. And it looked like Denver. See, the thing is, Denver. If you just put him on that particular roster, I think they can make the Super Bowl because they have offensive players. Unfortunately, and they have good, very good defensive players. Unfortunately, the quarterback is middling to, let's just say, below average. You know, like the Denver talent roster is a Rodgers person away from looking a whole lot different than is currently perceived. And so that is a huge balance that maybe it happens, maybe it doesn't. If it doesn't happen, then, you know, Denver is going to be probably about a, you know, 7-win team. With Rodgers on that team, they're very likely a 12-win team, basically man up with the Chiefs. And then, you know, the way the structure of the AFC is crazy.
Yeah, that would be a hell of a division with it. Patrick Mahomes, the Raiders, you know, Derek Carr's okay if he's still, you know doing the thing. And Justin Herbert, you know, going into his second year with the Chargers, that would be a hell of a division. And if you add Rodgers to the mix,
absolutely,
that could compete with the NFC West as far as quality of squads, quality of teams that win games. If you add him to that mix, you're right. I mean, the Packers immediately just drop off the face of the NFC. They will. You know, I don't think I think Jordan Love is their quarterback behind him, and you throw. Who's the other quarterback? Jared Goff, Justin Fields in Chicago. Whenever he gets, whenever they decide to give him the starting role behind Andy Dalton, and then who in the team? Kirk Cousins in Minnesota. So, I mean, yeah, that kind of opens it up for everybody else, obviously, because I thought the Packers with how that was going to go last year. I thought, you know, Aaron Rodgers was going to get injured like he did the year before that, and then it all go downhill. But he actually managed to stay upright and healthy, and they ended up winning. And then they lost to Tampa Bay, and you know, the rest is history. But, yeah, Tampa Bay bringing back everybody. Obviously, what they've done, they're looking at history right now. They repeat. And I think that's a lot of motivation in itself with that quarterback, with that roster, when he got – all-star type of talent that they're bringing back. So, yeah, that would definitely hurt everybody else in the NFC, and definitely, you know, Tampa Bay will be the clear-cut favorite in the NFC on paper. I can't think of it. You know, the West got some good teams, but I don't think they could beat Tampa Bay. If Tampa Bay wants to play, that's the thing.
That's the thing. And if you see how the way that their Tampa Bay schedule sort of breaks up, you know, I don't see them really losing a game in their division this year because of Atlanta, Carolina, New Orleans, maybe that, you know, without Breeze, we'll see how that plays out. They get the NFC East this year. You know, that they're look, you could easily see three victories coming out of there. I mean, pick the one you want that doesn't play out. And then they get the AFC East. You know, so maybe they'll get Buffalo, give them a tough game, and maybe New England or Miami won. So all of a sudden you look, and their road to the championship looks fair, you know, barring any, you know, extreme injuries or just, you know, a bad off day, like the path is there. It's right there. And that's what I'm trying to figure out, like, who can be this other team that sort of comes up and surprises. Maybe the Rams, but I'll have to wait and see on that. But after that, you know, San Francisco with the injuries, Seattle, you know, we've sort of seen the Seattle story play out now the last couple of years with, you know, not much, you know, it's good, but not really good enough. After that, like, who else? We're not really talking about much else. Like, the NFC is sort of like searching for teams, especially if you take Rodgers out of it. Hey, let me ask you something, because we talked about this on the show 2 weeks ago. And I mentioned this. The Vegas over-unders came out a month ago, maybe about 6 weeks ago, actually. And it has the Giants right now, and there really hasn't been much action to change this either way, but it has their over-under for wins this season at 7.
Really?
It has not moved. The money has been pretty much coming in on both sides. There's not been enough action to bring it up. There hasn't been enough action to bring it down. And I feel like that, and I mentioned this to Chris last week, or last show, that perhaps there is an imbalance between the way that number looks right now and what the fan base actually believes about the team that exists. And that has me wondering as to whether or not that 7 might actually be accurate.
I thought I would have said somewhere between 5 and 6. 7? He gave us an extra one. Wow.
Yeah, 7.
Yeah, I know.
Which would translate to a 7.
Well, actually, now that you think about it, well, you got an extra game on the schedule, too. So I'm always looking at 16 games. So that might be part of the factor. Well, that actually could be right if you add in the extra game. Okay. And 16 games, I would have said, nah. But that extra game was because of the Miami game. That might be in the ballpark if you figure that, if they could get squeezed out another win. I got to go back in the schedule and really analyze it because I didn't really think it through. But I would have said 7 is too high, but they might be on to something. But I would have stick to probably 6 as of right now. And especially, we haven't seen the quarterback, that everything obviously goes through that guy and playing well and staying healthy. And that's a whole another conversation for the rest of the summer, man. So,
and we got it last and we had it 2 weeks ago. But it had me wondering, right? Because you've probably heard it. There's been a lot of talk among the fan base that this is the quote unquote no excuses year. This is the year that we make the leap and we become a halfway decent team again and all this other stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, okay, let's just say the Giants do in fact finish 7-10 this season.
Mm-hmm.
Are folks okay with that? Or are we looking at that situation and saying, all right, heads have to roll if they go, 10 losses again for what would I think be, the fourth or fifth straight season? Yeah, for the fifth straight year, 10 losses in a row? Like, I keep wondering whether or not folks are conditioned to that possible outcome if that plays out.
Well, the question I hate to answer with a question, does that mean division title with 7 wins?
I'm going to say no.
Then
I think there's a market correction.
They got to win the division. It's not, a progress. For me, it's not progress as far as, okay, we won extra games. My whole thing, win the division. I don't care how you do it, just win it. And that's the thing. Because you got to outplay the teams in your group. To have a chance to get into the playoffs. And I think progress to me is winning the division. And I think the only way any team in this division is going to be like last year, you have to win the division or you're not in, because all the teams just are not as good as teams in the NFC West. Now here's another thing, Carl. You brought up a good point as far as the South. The Saints are not – I don't see the Saints being the Saints. Like, without Breeze, and I know Breeze was a shell of himself, there's still Breeze at the end of the day. I just think they're just going to fall off the map. So, basically, there's only going to be one team coming out of that division. And now, it's a wait and see, like you said, about Aaron Rodgers. If he leaves, that opens up another slot for a team like, let's say, maybe possibly from the NFC East. If he leaves the Packers, like, the domino effect starts to happen. I could easily see at least 2, if not 3, from the West. There's no way they're getting all the teams because it just can't work with the numbers. But if Rodgers is gone,
they're doing the extra playoff again this year, right? So I have that. Are they doing that again with the seven teams?
Oh, that's another. Oh, there you go. You're right. There you go. Shoot.
I keep forgetting about that. Division.
Yeah, right. The Giants have no excuse. This is actually helping my argument. They have no excuse. Extra playoff spot, extra game. Win the division, man. It's that simple. Win the division.
Okay.
Everybody.
Other
teams.
Yeah. I agree with you on this, that this is the time. Like, 2022 or two, like, no, like they've been losing long enough that this year should be a fair marker evaluation of this entire sort of regime. You know, the general managers had 4 years now four off seasons to build this roster, that we can't keep saying we're a year away from being a year away anymore. That cannot, I'm sorry. That's something that I'm just not flying with. But mm-hmm. That's why when I saw that 7 number on the win, on the over-under win totals, I was like, okay. Because if that is the number and they do finish 7-10, then are we all saying something is seriously going awry here? Is that what we're prepared to say?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Playoff or bust for me. It's put up or shut up time for that general manager. It's put up or shut up time for a lot of the core of that roster. And they had their chances last year, and they blew it in some games. We talked about it all season long. So it's time to get healthy. It's time to play smart. It's a gladiator sport. I mean, guys get hurt. I get that. But enough is enough. It's been time removed. You got to make the playoffs, especially if you've seen other teams get weak right before our eyes within the conference. I think it's just time to really, you know, try to surpass that goal, but, you know, 8 or 9, but I don't see that happening right as of right now. And we'll see what kind of cohesion they have, man. Any additional thoughts, man, as we wrap up, man? I don't know, we got some hockey games to get to tonight and NBA and Shahosha Bang, man. And then we'll go through every division, every episode, but by the time we get to the start of the regular season, it should be fun. And we'll talk all areas of this team. Your thoughts as well, your final thoughts as we wrap up.
Yeah, so, you know, we wrap up. I was thinking about this week, you know, as we go into the season. You know, I was looking at 4 particular areas of the team, right? Like quarterback, offensive line, defensive line, and secondary. And say, okay, if we're going to win this division, are we going to be top-notch in at least one of those position categories? And I don't know the answer to that. And if I don't know the answer to that, then that tells me that, all right, this is going to be a lot harder than we think, because if we can't get elite play in one of those 4 areas, then, like, what are we doing here? Basically.
Yeah. Right on. Say no more, man. We'll discuss it. I don't know. We might. I don't know. Maybe we have an episode in 2 weeks, or maybe next week. We'll figure that out, and we'll let everybody know. Carl, stay on the line as we wrap up. I'll let you off air real quick. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, the whole shebang. Big Blue Roundtable. I was going to say, Carl, my final thoughts, I was going to say this. The fossil years was the last years I remember. Those were the last years I remember beating up on Philadelphia. We used to have our way with them until, you know, McNabb started to, you know, get in the swing of things with Andy Reid. Those are the last years I remember we had Philly's number, and then
the Key Horn game.
Right, yeah, because I grew up. That's all I remember was, you know, we used to have battles with them, but we used to always coming out on a winning end. So I was used to the Giants beating the Eagles. Then after the 2002. That was my worst moment with the Giants, or with Fossil, that team, when they went to Candlestick, when they were up 38-14, and they ended up with that crazy botch at the end of the game and couldn't kick the field goal after blowing that big lead. My favorite game, the 2000 NFC Championship game when they beat the Minnesota Vikings 41-0. That was probably one of my favorite games in sports, like, you know, as a fan. You know, because they everybody was talking about the high power offense of the Vikings and what they did to the Vikings team that day, shutting them out, putting in a goose egg, and they got smoked in the Super Bowl. We knew they were going to beat the Ravens, but then turn from that to a couple of years later, losing the way they did, and he got ripped in the newspapers. I remember that, man. in the city. They destroyed Faso, and it was hard to stomach after being up 38-14, you know?
He had the probably, if you outside of Coffin, he probably had probably the highest of highs of 41-0 and the lowest of lows in that not only that Super Bowl, but the 38-14 situation that happened, you know, 2 years later, because I think that set in motion, we didn't know it at the time, that set in motion what that 2003 season became, because I remember I was like, man, you know, they've got the offense here, they've got, you know, good defenders, maybe they can make a potential Super Bowl run. And then I think they went from like 4-3 or three, or maybe they were 3-4 at the time or something like that. And then they just sort of crashed that the rest of the way. And I think they lost the rest of their games. And like Fossil's career should not have gone down the way that it did at the end there, because I felt like he had some, you know, some very good years that he put in the bank that we should appreciate him more. And I don't think he'll be a guy that will be appreciated much by the fan base, unfortunately. But now that he's not here, you know, we can at least miss on some of those, you know, some of those times. You know, that 97 season with, you know, Charles Way as the team's, you know, one of the team's, you know, leading running backs that year, Danny Cannell at quarterback, and they make the playoffs at 10-5-1. Like, nobody saw that at all.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, those are the interesting days, man. When the team had heart, man, those Jesse Armstead teams. Yeah, you're right, Charles Way, Danny Cannell. Oh, man. Chris Callaway, God. Man, you're taking it way back.
I mean, that's from the way back machine.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. All right, Big Blue Roundtable. We'll talk, I don't know, maybe next week or in a couple of weeks. We'll figure that out, and we'll get to these other divisions and areas of the team. Carl, stay on. Song and ladies and gentlemen, Big Blue.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Bleep bloop, 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 bleep bloop.
Because, you know, I did not.
Huh? Say that again? Oh, shit. Hello? Let's see right there.
Tampa Bay. You know, like you can't discount Tampa Bay. They've been, you know, they've been awesome for the last, you know, number of years, and they continue to do so. So I think, you know, I would give them the edge based on, you know, history. The Islanders look very hungry. I think they've got a tremendous shot. On the other side, Montreal, I'm not totally sure what to make of that situation. How you know, Toronto did what they did, and that just that sort of led the path for them to get through and then win that other series in four games. And tonight, I think Vegas can win their series tonight. I believe, I'm not 100% sure. I have to check that. But that's been a halfway decent series. Them losing Kadri on Colorado has been huge, based on the way at least two of those games I've seen have played out. So I'm not, maybe Colorado forces game seven, but I don't see it. And so Vegas would then in that case move on. I wanted to ask you, since I didn't get a chance to call in the night that the season had ended. What did the folks think about how the Knicks season, not season, but how that series with Atlanta played out? Because I visited Chicago that weekend when they were playing two of the games, and so I saw the guys when I was down there. It seems like the way I'm hearing it or the way I'm perceiving it, being far away as I was and not really seeing many of the Knicks games this season, was there extra hype boosting the Knicks over Atlanta the way – because it seems like there's a difference between how the fans perceive the series going in and then how I watched the first two games where I was like, wait a second, I don't think the Knicks have much of a chance. Like, was there something going on there?
No, I just think they didn't have the firepower to compete with them offensively. And it was apparent even the first two games. I think the second game, they played excellent defense in the third and the fourth quarters, but they had nothing. Like, they don't have the scoring. We know that. They're a defensive-minded team, but the Hawks got snipers, man. Bonafide, good shooters. That's hard to defend, man. Even as a good caliber team.
I just watched the first two games. I'm like, wait a second. Atlanta has much more talent than the Knicks do. I don't know how they were finishing fifth, but.
Yeah, I just didn't like the way the Knicks. Like, I thought the games would have been a lot more competitive. I would have been okay if they did not. You know, I thought they should have got to the second round. But even with that said, Carl, I mean, I just think they – I didn't say they quit. It just got severely outplayed, man. It was just – the games were just not close, starting with game 3, 4, and 5. And that's where I was like, man, that's not what we were used to pretty much before the win streak. The win streak kind of waked up a lot of fans' eyes, but – you know, without the production from the point guard, Elfrid Payton, he gave us nothing, and you moved Derrick Rose to the starting lineup. That's where, you know, your rotations were not intact, and you're relaxed. Because Rose and the whole team was more effective when he was coming off the bench. When you moved him to the starting lineup, that's when, you know, everything just was out of whack, and it was not the same, man. But, we'll see how it goes this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if the coach panicked or not when he put Rose in the starting lineup. That kid Payton, I was like, after about 5 minutes of watching him, I was like, man, how is he starting? Like, I didn't know what the hell was going on there. But man, I'm you know, they look like they have a good pace, but man, they're gonna need a better player than Randall if they're gonna really do much. That's the issue that I'm seeing after watching those five games. I'm like, Randall cannot be probably your best player, or second best player on the team if you expect to do anything. And unfortunately, I don't know where you're trading to get one of these dudes.
There's not a lot in free agency. You're just gonna have to add it as you go, and then maybe you could look for a deal midseason. Knicks have a lot of spending money, but I don't think there's a lot of guys on the open market. I would love to have. They just kind of need another three, and a guy who could play the three, who could put the ball on the floor, play some defense. That's a start, and I think we're missing that, a lot of that, too. Outside of Alec Burks, who did a decent job for us, you need more than that, like you said. And Randall, he had a very good season, but he just pressed in the playoffs, man. It showed, man. But, let's do that. Let's do that with the spotlight with you, and then we'll talk some NFL. As the weeks go this summer, this is going to fly by fast by the time we get to September, man. Thanks for coming on, Big Blue Roundtable. We'll get everybody else. We'll have some fun, man.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Peace.
All right, now.